tonight on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, we have Chicago Tribune cartoonist Scott Stantis. And from the Idle Muse Theater Company, we celebrate the premiere of Girl Found. Also for Theater Thursday, we have the International Voices Project. And be sure to get your calls in for Tell Me Something Good happening at the end of the show. But now, the favorite show of listeners in Grays Lake, Illinois, it's time for Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez.
Hey everybody, I hope that you are happy, healthy, and safe wherever you are tonight. We'll be hanging out until 2 a.m. when Nick D takes over. And don't forget, if you do have to get out of your car, or if you drift off to sleep and you're like, what happened next? Don't forget, you can check out our podcast on iTunes. Subscribe to the podcast. Maybe leave a note. And you can also check my Facebook page, Patty V Show, on Facebook. And you can go to Instagram for any of the photos that we take during the show. It's Patty Vasquez, C-H-I. I've got to be better about getting on Twitter. But for now, that's what I got. So Scott Stantis.
Have you been off Twitter? Or just not using it much?
It's linked to our Facebook page.
Oh, you know, okay.
Well. I wish I was better at it. I was trying for a while. I'll go through these spurts where I try to write some random joke or respond to something that's going on. Like when the very strange therapy animals are being brought on flights, I wrote a few quippy things and went back and forth with yes. people. But, you know, that I think so. I actually know the last time I wrote something quippy, which was, I think, wasn't there a girl who was bringing, what did she want to bring? A peacock or something like that? We were all deciding what our therapy animal would be.
What was yours?
Mine was a, what do you call it? What's the one that from the Galapagos Islands? A platypus would be my therapy animal. Because I think that it's so unique, they wouldn't actually, they wouldn't actually stop you. They'd be like, well, who would expect a platypus?
Yeah, no, and it makes you giggle.
It does. I mean, it's a fun word. Yes. It's a strange animal. Yeah. It's got webbed feet.
That's from Australia, though.
It is off. Isn't it Galapagos Island off in that?
That's off Chile, but
is it off? What was the island that Darwin went to?
Yeah, Galapagos.
I thought. I'm so confused now. Where are the Michael? Can you find out? Oh, someone's calling. We'll look into that.
We'll look. See. Yes, because our listeners need to know.
See who's wronger.
God, I'm so wrong on this show so often.
No. You could be. I am. Look, I'm adjusting to the weather going up and down. It's very cool tonight. It feels kind of nice. Yes,
it's not supposed
day.
To be. It's late. It's mid May. Well, it's almost late May.
We've had snow in May before. I'll take this.
Okay.
Yes.
I know. I know. But it's still wrong. Everyone else. It was the warmest. It's what, the 400th warmest month on record. Like some crazy number like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, yet global warming can't make it to Illinois.
Climate change.
Climate change.
Well, because the words matter, and people, when you say global warming,
okay, I'm sure
they're like, it's chilly out tonight, so I guess global warming's not working. I don't know why
dumb.
They talk like that.
I don't know, but because it's dumb. No, it's dumb because that's not what they mean by that, and climate scientists didn't mean that. But anyway, yeah. So, but it can't come here.
You really? Were right, by the way, a listener. Well, at least a listener says you're right that they're from Australia.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
still, Galapagos has a lot of unique animals.
I'm so confused with my memory right now.
You're tired. You're growing. You sleep like 3 hours a week.
This week has been a little bit rough. I got up early to do the Mincing Rascals with you, my friend.
Thank you for doing that.
And John Williams and Steve Bertrand. I do. I shouldn't tease John Williams on the air, but I'm going to. I'm amused by the fact that when Kristen McQuarrie's not there, he flips me in to replace her. And I mean, I guess I could feel okay. It's like, well, the girl's not here. We need another girl.
Yeah.
But it's fine. But let's say I was sitting in for Eric Zorn.
I've suggested this. I suggested this last time because Eric wasn't this week. I said, well, let's throw Patty in there.
All right then. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, that makes.
But then also Kristen McQuarrie was not there.
Yeah. So sorry.
Well, I just think I'm like, does he not want to have two women on the show? Is my concern, right? So like, because you've not been there before, and he doesn't call me when you're not. I'm not saying you're not necessary, but I know you haven't been there before.
No. Actually, during the recording today, Bertram said, well, you know, this is more for Eric. Or I noticed you jumped in too with the facts that we actually know things because Bert. Steve, God bless him, said, well, you know, this is probably a question more for Kristen or Eric, but, and it was a local issues thing, and you and I actually, you know stuff.
I know. Well, I guess he was saying that they were, you know, that it was like newsy stuff or state stuff, I guess.
No, he was insulting me.
The placid-looking male platypus has a secret weapon, spurs on his hind feet that are connected to a gland that produces toxic venom. Did you know that?
Oh, my God.
Males use them against predators or in battles with other males during mating season. A strike from a toxic platypus spur can kill a dog. So there you go.
Holy crap.
Native to the rivers of eastern Australia, platypus are, and apparently it's not platypuses or platypi.
What is it? What's the plural?
Just platypus are, because now the verb afterwards are, right? So platypus are monotremes, trems. Unlike most other mammals, monotremes never evolved live birth, but instead lay eggs.
I know.
Like they're...
I knew that.
There's a lot of words I can't pronounce in this. They produce milk for their young, but lack nipples. Now live with that information.
Okay, they make the milk, but they don't deliver it. I'm confused by what method do they give it to the kids?
I don't know. The first time a platypus was brought from Australia to Britain, people couldn't believe it was a real animal. They thought that a trickster had sewn two animals together.
I'm still hung up on how they deliver the milk.
I'm still hung up on the fact that I thought they were from the Galapagos Islands. What the hell's from the Galapagos Islands? And I was, I guess because maybe I got the platypus and Galapagos. I'm like, it must be from there because they're silly words. They're fun words to say.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't believe we're going off on that. No, platypus, I mean, that's a freak. Could you imagine the first, like, Westerners show up and they go, you know, of course, they're Cockney because they're all criminals.
Right. It was like a prison camp.
Yeah.
They would just send...
Think about that. Think how brutal this is. Anytime you think as the British as anything like a fit or literate, which they are that as well, but they are so brutal. We're going to take people, prostitutes, criminals, and a lot of political prisoners. We're going to throw them on a boat for 6 months. Mm-hmm. And if they survive that, we're going to throw them in a place that's virtually deserted. And with no tools and no training as to how to survive there, enjoy.
Have a good time.
Yeah, and don't pick up the platypus, especially the men guys, because the male ones, because the hind legs.
Yeah, do not. I don't know how Darwin made it, but apparently, well, no, wait, he didn't go there. Australia. He went. It's off of Ecuador. So there.
Ecuador.
No, I believe that you were most certainly in the right part of the world.
Yeah,
no doubt about
Chile.
It.
I thought it was under Chile, but okay.
I have a more important question to ask you when we come back. How do you load your dishwasher? More after this on 720 WGN. I've been talking to a friend of mine who swears that their relationship with their spouse might come to an end if they can't figure out how to load the dishwasher in a congenial way.
Really?
Well, my friend who actually lives in Los Angeles, I was talking to Larry Miller a while back, and he was telling me that he'll load the dishwasher and like start putting some things in there, and he'll come back, and everything he's done has been rearranged, and there's never a conversation about it. It's just when he comes back, everything, and then it's a standoff, and he's like, all right, I'm just gonna put it back the way I had it and do it the way I load the dishwasher. So it's like this sort of, so in my house, I was laughing because Steve washes all of the dishes pretty thoroughly
before he puts them in the dishwasher.
And then puts them in the dishwasher.
Okay, that's insane.
And he will sometimes rearrange the things that
No, he doesn't.
But I don't put them back. Here's my solution. Ez probably knows what my solution would be to this. Ez does not like this kind of solution. It's very passive aggressive. I think you've gone through similar things. I just don't do the dishes anymore. I'm like, okay, if you want to do it a certain way, then you go ahead and do that.
Yeah, but then Steve has to do all the dishes.
He certainly does.
Yes, he does.
AKA, I have to do all the dishes.
Right. Yeah, it is. Right. So I am, in this scenario, I am V. And so I don't do the dishes.
No, I think that's a great solution. If he's going to be, you know, that kind of
particular
person, yes.
Yeah.
And
I think that he now, like when I do put something in, he doesn't touch it in the hopes that maybe this will be a step in the direction of also doing the dishes. To be honest, I mean, I'm not saying that he should do certain things around that. I mean,
yes.
He's a stay-at-home dad.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I feel like a man from the 50s, like, why don't you go ahead and make my dishes clean over there?
Well, okay. Yeah,
terrible.
There's a division of labor, and you've agreed on it. So you pitch in. You don't have to in that agreement, as I would perceive it.
I don't know. If that's true, but I mean,
but let's just go with this.
The standards of cleanliness in my house have plummeted. Not that they were ever like I've never been.
Well, it's a house of men too, by the way.
Yeah, there's three dudes. One of whom, like, when he doesn't like something he's eating, just goes ahead and drops it. Like Declan just drops stuff on the floor. Well, we make jokes. We're like, Declan, we'll find you. You don't need to leave a trail of crumbs from the. I mean, you know, it's a certain thing that we all. I mean, even Griffin's pretty patient with it. For those who don't know, Declan has autism and is very sensory oriented, and if he doesn't like the way something tastes or feels, he just gets rid of it. So
that's pretty awesome.
He just goes, just spits it out. Really? You like bread yesterday. What's happening?
But here's the thing. You made the effort. You put the dishes in the dishwasher and he rearranged them.
Yeah, it feels a little weird.
You have to rearrange them because you put them in wrong and then you can't fit everything in. I'm here for Steve.
You can fit enough in. That's all you need.
Not enough. You should be using every space available because then you can wash everything that needs to be washed. You don't have to run it twice or however many times.
You know what's funny? You know what Steve doesn't like doing that I like doing? I like putting all the forks with the forks, the spoons with the spoons, the knives with the knives. And I think we had this conversation. Did you mention it or did Steve mention it? You're Steve in this scenario, Ez.
I don't do that.
I like it, but he said then you have the spoons cuddling each other or whatever, spooning each other.
Yeah.
And so they don't get as clean because they fit into each other.
No, I don't think that's an issue.
Thank you.
Because wouldn't the water get in between?
Yeah,
it's a move them around. Yeah, it undulates and agitates.
I like the way you say undulates.
If anything, that's a time saver because then you pull out the box of silverware and then you're able to just pop it into the proper spaces.
Correct.
How long do you wait between washings? I'm just curious.
Washings?
Dishwashings, I guess. I mean, because
we run the dishwasher every day in my house. There's four of us.
Actually, more for Ez. Yes. Because it seems like, you know.
How often do you run the dishwasher?
We don't do that many. We don't eat that much in the house.
Right.
So we can't run it. I mean, if there's like three dishes, I'm not going to run it.
I agree with that.
Right.
I used to overfill it, too. I think that's probably a thing that I did.
Yeah, that's not good. Do you overfill the washing machine, too?
I've been known to perhaps push the limits of capacity on my washing machine.
And then
you're
trying to dry stuff, and then it gets that weird smell if you don't dry it right?
Well, I think the problem for me is that most of the things that I wash, I try to line dry. So I end up not doing my laundry because I'm like, well, then I got to hang it all. So, yeah. And then Steve isn't allowed to wash my laundry because I have ended up losing very beloved like pants and shirts because he put them in the dryer and shrunk them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought you mean like you lost them forever. I was like, where could they have gone?
Yeah, still miss those pants.
I wanted to ask guys, if I may, real quick, where does that funky smell come from? Because you're absolutely right. If they're not dried all the way or correctly, it smells like you ran it through a swamp.
Well, she was saying because it's the volume is too much for the dryer,
right.
So it doesn't dry thoroughly.
So yeah, think about it. Heat, dark crevices. That's where then you get that stink.
They get that stink on. I have this. I do tell a story on stage. I was on the road for about 10 days, and I came home, and Steve had washed all the laundry in the house for the boys and himself, and all the linens. And when I came home, and I walked in the bedroom, and there were four bags of laundry all the clean laundry were just shoved in there, like he had washed it and dried it and not put it away. And I was like, what bothered me was that when I'd left for my trip, there had only been two bags for laundry. So instead of putting it all away, once he'd run out of room in those first two bags, he left the house, went to the store to buy two more bags to shove clean laundry into. As you can imagine, I had a really hard time keeping my cool because he was like, and he said this, he goes, well, I didn't know what you wanted me to do with it.
look at my face.
which led to a, come here for a second. Let's see all these hangers in the closet. I don't care if you put socks on those things. Put it away. Yeah, it was a rough day. Let me take a quick break here. By the way, before I do, from the 630, I'm with you. Just put half spoons facing up, half down, and make sure they're all not spooning. Oh, that's a good solution. So they're not all spooning before you wash. It looks like people are, see, I am not alone with the dishwasher blues. More after this on 720 WGN. The internet. National Voices Project is playing through May 31st at Instituto Cervantes. I don't know. I'm feeling a little bit nervous. I feel like we're using other languages here, and I don't want anyone to make any phone calls to ICE. I know that hearing another language is very upsetting for some people, and they are compelled to just yell at individuals who are just talking to each other. Anyway, joining us in the studio is Patricia Acera. Am I saying that correctly?
You got it.
Is it Acera?
Acera, that's right.
Acera. I can almost.
Or Acera. Acera.
Oh, that was deeper.
Thanks.
Acera. Wow, I didn't know I could do that. Thank you, Patricia. She is the executive director for the International Voices Project. Again, of course, Scott Santis joins us in studio, and I'm excited to talk about this. This is the ninth season of play readings by playwrights from around the world, taking place again at the Instituto Cervantes at 31 West Ohio through May 31st. Tell us a little bit about International Voices, and I'm guessing it feels particularly important this week.
It really does. It reminds you how important it is to recognize that the U.S. is this country full of different languages, different faces, different voices, and it's one of the best qualities we have as a country. So we take this month or this 6 weeks, sometimes annually, and we listen to the different voices of playwrights from around the world, and those voices reflect the different communities in the U.S.
And these are the performances, which, by the way, I'm sorry, how much do the performances cost? What's the entrance fee?
They are free. They're all free.
Gratis.
Gratis. With a free reception afterwards.
If I say pro bono, is that also upsetting for people? There's a reception afterwards.
There's a reception afterwards.
Lovely.
A free reception.
Free reception after
Holy
each
shores.
Reading.
That sounds fantastic.
Yes. Our cultural partners often jump in and they'll put out a beautiful spread of wine and sweets, and it's delightful.
Go for the voices, stay for the treats.
Absolutely.
I love that. So coming up on Tuesday, the 22nd, Tuesday the 22nd at 7 p.m. from French Canada, we have Haven. And so tell us a little bit about how this collaboration works.
Sure.
Yes.
So now in our ninth year, we are collaborating directly with translators. So there are translation organizations throughout the country, like ALTA, the American Literary Translators Association. There's an organization called TINT, Theater and Translation, that's a national group. We will go to our cultural partners. We have literary agents around the world, and they're constantly sending us new scripts. We're reading all year round, and we're trying to find those scripts that are really engaging topics now that are important to American citizens and important to global citizens.
This sounds amazing. Now, I'm trying to, Haven sounds like it's part a play about grieving, and also a hole of some sort has erupted and swallowed their car.
That's right. And the interesting thing about work from other parts of the world is that there are different styles that are often explored. So in the U.S., we're really comfortable with what we call naturalism, realism. Things are very straightforward. But in other parts of the country, particularly in Canada right now, there's a lot of playwrights working in magical realism,
mm-hmm.
and greater allegorical imagery or metaphorical imagery. So it's interesting to see that kind of seeping into a play and seeing that alongside our own American or U.S. style.
Did you have any thoughts on why that is, why Americans prefer naturalism, realism? The idea that something should look the way it is meant to look?
I think it's the most comfortable. It's the most straightforward. It has the most direct sort of setup, resolution, conflict kind of structure.
Mm-hmm.
And we're the country that gave birth to this amazing film industry. So for a long time, we were sitting alongside that structure.
Right.
And in some ways, competing with it.
So something should look the way it looks to us.
That's right.
Or sounds to us. And
that's
maybe,
right.
Maybe that goes into our resistance to certain ideas.
I think that's true. Yeah.
And it's so interesting because we're a country that kind of really created such a new way of coming together and living in communities in a democracy.
Absolutely.
So we're growing. So this is by Mishka Levine.
Right. And Mishka will be there. She's joining us along with the consulate representatives from Quebec. Back.
All right. And that's going to be on Tuesday, May 22nd. It's a French-Canadian play. These are all readings by playwrights. So are they also incorporating actors or?
They incorporate professional actors from the city. We have 10 professional directors. The playwrights come in. We have 7 different theater companies represented from Chicago this year. It's quite an interesting bunch.
And you've been, how long has it been running?
This is the ninth year. We're heading into our 10th. Mm-hmm. But there were smaller versions of it, smaller iterations of it along the way. The whole coming together of it was about 9 years ago with our first reading at Cervantes. So it's great to be there.
And tell me a little bit about, before we talk about the other plays, I'm not familiar with Cervantes.
Cervantes is the most beautiful space in the city. I think I'm a little biased, but it's very centrally located in River North. They put together programming both based in Spanish language, but they also open it up to other cultures too. So a lot of our partners have now started doing their programming at Cervantes as well.
Scott, are you familiar with Cervantes?
No, where is it again?
It's on Ohio and Dearborn.
Okay. Oh, that's right over here.
Yeah,
that's right.
That way.
How
that's right.
Is it like on a, it's not ground floor.
On the corner. You go up to the second floor.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is it above?
They're in the first floor as well. There's an elevator for handicapped. Takes you right upstairs.
I'm trying to imagine the building. Yeah.
I walk
right
by it 100 times
the
a week.
Post, I think the Chase is kitty corner from it.
Okay.
There's a Chase right there. The post office is right there.
What a great area.
It's plus, fantastic.
So people can come down, have a nice dinner somewhere,
right.
Head over to Instituto Cervantes.
And the red line's right around the corner. At Grand.
Convenient. Yeah. All of that works. And then on Thursday, May 24th at 7 p.m. from India, A Muslim in the Midst. Now, this takes place just days after the 9/11 terrorist attacks in America, obviously. And then on the other side of the world, in the Silicon Valley of India, Bangalore, a poor Muslim family is stranded. And this sounds like, amazing storytelling. There's another, watching from them closely from inside a car is an American Indian Hindu couple. Wow, this is like very intense. There's
it
a lot
really
going on.
It really is. We read this years ago, and we wanted to do it, but we couldn't quite get the rights to it. The pieces didn't fall in place. And then this year, everything fell into place.
This sounds fantastic. All of this, again, sounds fantastic. And then on Thursday, May 31st at 7 p.m. again from Germany, Bang is set in Berlin, Germany, and pertains to the irrational desire for explosions and sensations in the political sphere. Whoa, hello.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and it's a great way to close the festival.
Oh, wow. It's a biting satire of the longing for macho men, leaders who provide simple solutions for complex... What is that like?
It doesn't sound familiar at all.
It's interesting that they say that.
Can't imagine what the source material.
What day did this start? Is it just the week of the 22nd?
We just started at the beginning of the month. We'll run through May 31st.
Okay.
And now we're looking at, we're actually putting into place our programming through the rest of the year until we get to year 10. And we're really thinking about what year 10 is going to look like.
Well, I'll know more about you and this incredible series. Again, International Voices Project. You can go to ivpchicago.org. That's IV as in Victory, P as in Patty. Chicago.org. It is Patty. Do you go by Patty?
My father calls me that.
My mom. Okay, let's not get into it. But I, body. It's always sound like potty. Like
yes.
going to the potty.
Yes.
And so my friends would make fun of me. So she tried calling me Trisha and Patsy. And so we're fine. But so we just go up by Patricia.
It's easier.
It works. Again, the Instituto Cervantes is at 31 West Ohio. And we will talk more with our guest, Patricia Acerra, who is the executive director of the International Voices Project. More in a moment on 720 WGN. The International Voices Project is playing now through May 31st at Instituto Cervantes. I don't know if I'm saying that right. My Spanish is terrible. And is it Spanish? there's no, I feel like there should be an accent in here somewhere. Patricia Acerra is in studio with us, and she is the executive director of the International Voices Project. You can go to ivpchicago.org to see the performances, which are free to the public, although reservations are requested. And there's a reception afterwards with some wine and treats. And I want to find out where are you from? Are you from Chicago originally?
I was born in Berwyn.
Berwyn.
That's
correct. Thank you, Sonas Venguli.
Okay. That's right. Everybody does it. You know, that's how you know a local. Right?
I can't help myself. Yep.
That's right. My dad was born in Italy, came over when he was 16, and all of my mother's family was born over there, except for her.
Wow. Now, do you speak Italian fluently?
I like to say I speak like a slow-learning second grader.
I can feel you on that. What I can do is the accent.
Right.
Especially when my mom and I visited Mexico, I can pick up the accents.
Yeah.
But then you can, as soon as I start talking, try using verbs.
Right.
And
right.
You know, and the appropriate pronouns and things like that. Yes, I you put it more nicely than I did when I was visiting Mexico when I was younger.
And once you're emerged, yes. You know, your language skills will pick up. But if you're not swimming in it, you're not swimming.
I agree. And I get a lot of grief for it. I don't do you get a lot of grief for being, you know, your family being from Italy and not being able to speak Italian? Is it the same sort of shaming? Because I get shamed.
A little bit. Yeah. Yes. When I'm over there, people always assume that I speak Italian. And if I don't speak Italian, it's because I've been dropped on my head. They just assume
see,
I would
that,
have
that would
skill.
Be more the vein I was thinking about when I was in Mexico. People talked to me like perhaps there was something I was like I was touched or something.
Right.
There was something wrong with me. Yes. Yeah. So they get angry with you that you didn't learn?
They're sort of surprised. They're like you should have been born with it.
Right.
Like you're missing a limb. Where is that other limb?
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know how to tell people. I worked at it and just as you said, I am not swimming in
it. Did you guys, it was spoken in your house, of course, Italian,
it was
right?
spoken in our house, but my parents speak a very deep Southern dialect. And think of Southern as Southern here, too.
Sure.
You can go into the parts of this country where that Southern dialect is almost, it's very difficult for people to understand. And it's very true over there. The Neapolitans pretty much speak their own language.
And so do you think, let me ask you this. How did you get involved with the International Voices Project?
In 1998 or 99, I ran off and joined Italy. Some people join a circus. I just ran off.
What?
I was able to get my dual citizenship through my family.
Okay.
So I decided to move over there for a few months, and I ended up staying for a few years. And I worked with a theater company in Rome, and I brought some of my American plays, because I'd been working with Bailiwick here prior.
Oh, wow. Which is now Stage 773.
Correct. Uh-huh. Which is now Theater Wit.
Oh, that right next door.
That's right. Yes. Right next door. And I would bring plays over there. They'd get translated, and we'd run them in English and Italian.
Really?
So I was kind of doing the same thing in the opposite direction. But when I would meet Roman theater artists, they'd say, Chicago, does Chicago have theater? And I would say, theater.
Really?
Funny you should ask.
That's right. So it occurred to me that there was no exchange. And that I had the means to kind of do that. So I came back to the States after 9/11. I had been working over there, and my job ended in all the flurry of 9/11, and I brought a few pieces back with me, and that's really where the festival was born.
That's fantastic. Now, you have a master's in theology and then in directing.
That's right.
Does being having a master's in theology help when you're directing people?
It is. You know, I often said that my background was really in liturgy. Liturgy and theater, same thing, same structure. Mm-hmm. They start from a different text, but they have the same end goals, really, which is about community and about telling our stories together and about how telling our stories together transforms us as a community.
And trying to, what it means.
And finding out what it means.
Yes.
Yeah. And what does it mean to me individually? And what does it mean to the us of community?
And how we express that.
Yes.
That's amazing. And so what do you want people to know about the International Voices Project? What's been some of the response that you've gotten from people who join you?
I want to say it's not scary. It's all in English.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of fun. You don't really have to know anything about the culture to jump in. And it's a great way to dip your foot into the culture. It's a unique way. And you can jump in every night, and you're with a great group of people. We have a lot of regulars.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So it's a lot of fun.
It sounds like a lot of fun. We should go see the Scott.
Okay.
What are you doing next week?
Next week?
I'll buy.
I'll buy.
Wait a minute.
I got to tell you.
She'll buy for everybody.
A Muslim in the Mist is the one that kind of I find really
that
enticing.
That is a great script. And our partner, Rossica Theater, those folks are amazing. They do a lot of wonderful work.
And I don't want to offend you or anything, but the one about Bang from Germany, the explosions in Germans, I'm sorry, being French.
Does it make you tense?
A little bit.
Does it make you tense?
I have to say, some of the most interesting, cutting-edge work is coming out of Germany right now in terms of theater.
Interesting.
Really interesting stuff.
What are your thoughts on that? What might be the cause for that?
They're not afraid to break apart the structure and start over.
Oh, interesting.
So in the past few years, we've gotten sent scripts that have been produced over there regularly that will just have a series of lines of actors, but the lines aren't assigned to the actors.
Okay.
So the director will really put it together and can kind of shape where the direction is going to go. It's fascinating.
That sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
And what are your hopes for the? You were saying you're making plans for the 10th year of the International Voices Project. What are your thoughts on that?
We're starting to expand more nationally. We'd like to see playwrights who actually come into the country make more stops than say come in, go to New York, and go back.
Right.
You know, once you get them here, which is the hardest part of it, we'd like to see them have more opportunities nationally.
That sounds great.
So we're part of a network to move that around and to start producing more and sending our work nationally.
Well, I look forward to checking out the International Voices Project running now through May 31st. They're the next three performances. Are these the only three, or are these the ones you're highlighting?
These are the last three of the series.
The last three of the series. So Tuesday, May 22nd at 7 p.m. is from French Canada, Haven. Thursday, May 24th at 7 p.m. from India, A Muslim in the Midst. And then on Thursday, May 31st at 7 p.m. again from Germany, Bang. All of these performances will be at Instituto Cervantes at 31 West Ohio. You can go to ivpchicago.org. Performances are free to the public, but reservations are requested.
And all performances begin at 7 p.m.
There you go. She's saying, please, please, please don't show up late and make a lot of noise coming in. Thank you so much, Patricia. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.
Excellent. More in a moment. Scott, are you hanging out?
All
right, more in a moment, and then our news in 720 WGN. We continue Theater Thursday with our friends from the Idle Muse Theater Company. They're presenting the world premiere of Girl Found, playing now through June 10th at the Edge Theater. Joining us are Barbara, how do I say your last name? Hold on, let me make sure you have a microphone. There you go.
It's Loda.
Loda, pleasure to meet you, Barbara.
Pleasure to meet you.
Thank you. And tell us, where are you from, Barb? I'm sorry, I got very familiar too fast. That was too much.
No, that's okay.
Barbara. Hi, Barbara.
No, you can call me Barbara. Or Barb or Barbie.
Oh.
I'm from Detroit.
And
originally.
What brought you to Chicago?
Oh, gosh. You know, I've gone through a whole path because I've gone from Detroit to Boston for grad school and then New York and then Chicago.
Oh.
Trying to do the whole theater.
Yeah, right. It's quite the journey. It's quite the path. Also, and Barbara is the playwright of Girl Found. And Allison, okay, I'm going to ask you to say your last name, too.
Dornhagen.
Dornhagen. She is the director of Girl Found. Where are you from originally?
The easy way to say is all over. It was raised in the greater Cincinnati area, but I say I grew up in Chicago.
When did you move here?
1997.
You sound like I don't want to say how long ago it was.
I don't want to say.
That's okay. Now, how what was the adjustment for you from the Cincinnati area to come to Chicago? Is it sort of similar being in the Midwest?
I came up here for undergrad. Uh-huh. I am an absolute urbanite. And I did disappear from Chicago for a couple of years to go to grad school.
Which was where?
D.C.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I make that. I think that I should have lived in D.C. for a while. How'd you like D.C.?
I think the best way to say it is D.C. and I did not mix very well.
Oh, okay.
This was, and I'm going to preface this with, this was in the, I was in D.C. from 2008 to 2010.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like opinionated women.
Oh, in school or just in the whole city?
Socially.
Okay.
Or at least that was my experience 10 years ago.
I'm going to wager that I'm sure it's so much better these days.
I could go on. I don't necessarily think that's the point of our visit.
No.
Maybe over a cocktail, I'll indulge you.
Oh, I like the way this is going. So tell us about the story of Girl Found. Who wants to tell me about this?
I'm going to let Barbie take this.
It's about a young woman who is found after 6 years being missing. It's sort of the discovery of her and the connection back to her family. And she's found in a different country. I won't specify any of that.
Okay.
But she goes back to Detroit. And Detroit becomes another character in the play.
Okay. Interesting.
And very much is a metaphor for her experience.
And drawing on this, in the work that you've done before, what sort of inspires you when you're working on a piece like this? What drives you? Do you hear the voices? You know, sleep? Do you sleep with them? You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
You fall asleep like hearing them. Yeah,
absolutely, I do. And I also feel like what drives me is real life stories.
Mm-hmm.
I'm drawn to stories that are out there already in the world, and you start to write the play about it, and you try to even make it more realistic than you think the real life story is, because you think if you wrote it exactly like it is in real life, it would be completely, people would think, this is ridiculous.
You're
this
crazy.
This couldn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
But it's true. It's like we have the strangest stories in our real lives and out there in the news than could be even dramatized.
Okay.
I definitely live with the characters and get a sense of them. And Detroit, since I grew up there.
I was going to say.
Yeah, it was very true to me and true to my experiences there.
And sort of bringing that into play and working with the ideas of the imagery.
Yeah. Well, Detroit. And I also think that Detroit has gone through a whole identity change. So,
oh,
and
it's, certainly.
So, and that's what the play is a little bit about. It's about, like, can we change? What is the possibility of change?
And can you start all over? Is this kind of a starting over again?
Yeah. Yes. Can you start all over again? Exactly. And because Detroit has gone through a major change in the last few years, where it felt like sort of people looked down on it because they felt like there's nothing there now, and the crime is so bad, and actually there's physical destruction of the city.
Yeah. And
so that sort of fits the character of Sophie, who's the lead in the play.
And Scott, have you spent time in Detroit?
No. I'm just at the airport. Lovely airport.
I worked there once, like in is Lansing near there?
Yeah.
Is there a suburb?
Not really.
Lansing's
in the middle of the state.
There was a comedy club called Joey's. I never got to go. I never really got to see Detroit. And this would have been back in the 90s. How long ago were you young when you moved from Detroit?
Well, I moved in 1984.
So when the car industry was really still
king. But my family's still there, so I'm there all the time.
Oh, wow. All right. And what kind of industry are they in?
Well, there's definitely a number of my family members who've been in the car industry, but not in, like, the factory. Mm-hmm. They're more in, like, computer programming.
Oh.
Yeah. Systems analyst types. But, yeah, no, the whole car industry is the big thing. Is like people. There's so many people who are into factory work, and needing
woven into the history of Detroit.
Absolutely,
so thoroughly.
It's part of the fabric of Detroit.
I've got to go see Detroit. I mean, it's not that far away. And when you were when this came to when you were how did you decide who's going to direct the play that's going to be.
Well,
produced.
It kind of came. So Barbie and I have been working together for 3 years on this particular piece. It had been workshopped in a different festival, and I got approached to direct in Idle Muse's Athena Festival, which was launched in 2015 was the launching of it, and it was specifically to highlight female playwrights and female directors around female-centric stories. And Barb and I were talking about what piece we could work on together, and she sent me her original draft of Girl Found, and I fell in love with it. It's electric.
That's gotta be a good feeling.
Yeah.
You're like, I must do this.
Yeah, it really, really was. And, three other workshops, festivals later?
Well, initially it was done at Polarity Theater Company, and then
Idle Muse.
Then Idle Muse, and then 20%.
Oh, Raven, and
Raven,
then 20%.
Then Raven, and then 20%, yeah. So there's been a lot of interest in it. It was kind of interesting, because it always surprises me what plays grab people more than others, but I think there's a mystery element to it that grabs people. They really want to know what's going on, and they want to understand. And
right.
Yeah, so.
And it's always tricky, like, when you're pitching a new play to a theater company, who's going to grab onto it and who isn't? There was no guarantee that I was necessarily going to direct this. Mm-hmm. So when Idle Muse picked it up.
Yeah,
no, and yes, Barb was a huge advocate for me.
Yeah.
And for that, I will forever be grateful.
So how do you convince them? Do you send some swag bags?
Nonprofit arts don't really get to work like that. Idle Muse actually fell in love with it from the Athena Festival. They were after it. They got a little nervous when we were workshopping at other places.
Raven, yeah.
Oh, good.
But,
nice that they were worried about that.
Yeah.
Good.
Was
make them sweat a little
really
bit.
Really flattering.
Yeah.
But, artistic directors and those who are in charge of programming have to, look at their audiences and their reactions and all these other things. And Idle Muse just kind of kept coming back to Barb, like, we want this. We want this. We want this show. Keep us up to date of what's going on and different things like that. So,
That sounds fantastic. Let's talk more about the production.
Okay.
And before I do that, I want to let people know you can go to idlemuse.org to find out more information about the production of Girl Found. It is running Thursdays through Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Sundays at 3 p.m. Tickets start at only $15.
Yep.
I mean, this is a great opportunity to see incredible theater in Chicago. The theater, the Edge Theater, is at 5451 North Broadway. What's the cross street up there? People,
it is just south of Catalpa, which is one block south of Bryn Mawr if you want a major street.
So Andersonville?
Andersonville, yes. Edgewater, absolutely.
There you go. So it's North Broadway, 5451 North Broadway. Again, you can go to idlemuse.org. More with our guests when we come back in just a moment on 720 WGN. It's Theater Thursday. That's what we're talking about with our guests from Idle Muse Theater Company presenting the world premiere of Girl Found. We have playwright Barbara Lora. Am I getting close?
You're absolutely right.
Oh, I heard Yanny.
Laurel.
Here's the thing. The thing is that you laughing only encourages me to continue with this ridiculousness. I apologize to everybody involved. Well, you're only coming to this story today, so that's something we'll talk about with Scott in a little bit. But we are thrilled to have the playwright Barbara Lora and also Allison Dornhagen, who is the director of Girl Found. How big is the cast for this production?
Seven people.
Seven. That's a decent size. It's not too big. I mean, just having been in casts where, you know, if you have a lot of moving parts and a lot of personalities.
I've actually, you know, been doing theater long enough that I'm lucky to say that I would rather work with a person that's a delight to work with, that might require a little bit more sculpting, as opposed to somebody that hits the nail on the head every time but is just a real pain in the butt.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. I'm a stand-up comic and I've done some theater and other work, but I have to agree. And there comes a point where life's too short.
I'm probably going to get no work after this because I just said that.
I think people in the industry know people who those folks are, and people who are a lot of work, you know, will find work somewhere. Mm-hmm. People are eager. You know, they have a different idea, you know, in their mind of what they want to execute.
Yeah, I'm very much kind of the stereotypical Chicago theater person in the idea of I come at theater from the approach of ensemble. We tell this story together, and that's how we tell it. We can't tell it without anyone in this cast. And that's really much how I was taught and the school of thought that I come from. And so every time I direct, I really come from that approach of just building everyone together and listening and making sure that we have each other's back on the stage. So,
and how, I mean, is it, do you have you, de- I'm guessing you have developed sort of, I don't know if it's a technique or just a gut instinct when somebody auditions and you have a conversation with, I mean, you know, there's just some people that come with an energy.
Yeah, absolutely.
There? Yeah.
It is largely instinct. You know, I like to, there's so, auditions are so nerve wracking.
Really? So- for the director?
Well, I mean,
there's a lot of pressure. You want to accomplish your goal.
We want actors to make our jobs easy. We want people to come and solve our problem that is casting this show.
You want lightning, is what you're saying.
Right. But it's,
I got to remember that. Bring the lightning.
I'm the director that will come in and I will get up and I will shake your hand and meet you.
Ooh.
Because I want to break the ice. I want to break the tension of the, hi, I'm walking into an audition room and this is super awkward.
But you come from it as an actor. So that makes it a lot.
I've been doing the combination of acting, directing since I've been a professional. So it works to my advantage, and there are occasions when it works to my disadvantage. But
I think that makes you more friendly and more warm in that whole.
I thought it was just the booze.
I wish that we were able to imbibe on the air. It sounds like we'd have a really good time, but they say it's against the rules. I know. I've been saying that. So Barbara, when you see a production on its feet, have you ever? I mean, that's not quite what you had in mind. I mean, what is that experience like when something goes from the page to the stage?
Well, I'm always. I think of if I was going to be a writer who didn't think of collaboration, then I wouldn't write plays.
Wow. Plays, I don't think I've ever heard someone put it that way before.
Yeah. If you're writing plays, you're about collaboration. So I really believe in the whole collaborative experience.
I've heard that. I can't remember where I read it, but a script is an invitation to create something magnificent.
So, I mean, not that I don't have my own thing that I'm worried about or concerned about in particular plays, but I don't think that I'm so giving that that's the case, but I also feel like I'm very open to, I'm in the process. I believe in, if the actors aren't getting some kind of line, then it's probably something I did with the line that didn't make that work. If there's something that's not happening in a scene, and I look for collaborators who are willing to allow me to make changes during the process, which they did. Oh, yes, definitely. I definitely believe it, because sometimes you don't realize things mm-hmm. until they're up on their feet and you see the particular actors.
Or the possibilities, too.
Yeah. To say, hey, maybe we don't really need this scene to make this whole story happen.
Even in rehearsals, she would catch actors saying, you know what, you said this, as opposed to what was on the text. And it might just be changing an article mm-hmm. or the tense of a verb or something like that. And she said, you know what, it sounds more natural. Change it.
Wow.
Because the story is what's important. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as long as we don't change the storyline and it's just the delivery. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that sometimes I'm only one person and my viewpoint is only there.
I'm pointing at Allison because Nick D just walked into the producer's booth. I think you're asking about if he wanted to wave wildly. He's behind you, because sometimes he's very focused on the next on his show coming up later.
You just tell him that Scott Oaken says hello.
Well, I love the relationship that you guys have and the sort of comfort, it sounds like, and in that, you know, when I was talking about negativity or toxic people who are involved in production sometimes, it makes you just want to get it over with.
But it's a huge, huge compliment when a playwright trusts you with their work. And I will forever be grateful that you let me spearhead this project to its full production. Like, and this is schmoopy and cheesy and all of that stuff. But I really, you know, I've loved the script for as long as I have. And it's so interesting and intricate and relatable and accessible. And when a playwright trusts you, you know, I mean, Shakespeare's dead. So people can do, I know, newsflash.
What? And yet we have to study him over and over again, and every version of his stories has to be shared.
Right. But, you know, when you get the chance to work with a playwright on their vision and how they want a story told, especially on a world premiere, it's such a humbling and grateful experience. And because Barb and I were friends first, the fact that she would be like, you know what? You're not crazy. I'm going to let you. Well, she didn't say that, but.
No, I mean, honestly, that's vice versa, because I trust you because you care about the work mm-hmm. and the story. So, I mean, honestly, I think, and I like to work with women in general. Not that I don't like to work with men. I just, that women are not given enough opportunities. Older women, I really like writing characters that are older women, because
and by older, she just means not fresh out of undergrad.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Sorry, I wanted to clarify that.
No, anything. I mean, not, you know, it's not that I don't like younger women too, but I mean, I want to write roles for 40 up. Because there's so few women's roles out there.
I was even at an audition
it's amazing.
Like last week, and I overheard a woman saying to another woman, there are so few shows that older women, and by older I mean that read mm-hmm. in their late 30s to early 50s, there's so few opportunities. And that's actually something that I think Barb excels at as a playwright, is she really... She doesn't just give them that kind of stock character of the older ingenue or the grandmother or whatever maternal kind of category you want to place them in. They are three-dimensional and have journeys and emotions, and it's really beautiful.
Well, it's older. A world.
You make like, it sound like you got one foot in the grave.
Yeah, she's like, I'm fading away.
I know. She has another play. I'm totally going to promote this. She has another play called Phantom Pain that is for women. It was already produced, but it's an incredible show. It's four women, all in their 40s. Reuniting, that grew up together. It kind of fills that Bechdel test. They never talk about men, but what they talk about is so relevant and poignant, especially with what's going on in contemporary society, about race and female dynamics and feminism and all these other things. And I know I'm just sounding like a little nerdy Barbara Loaded cheerleader. But no, you underestimate yourself. And I have a microphone in front of me, so now I'm going to tell the world. But there are writers doing that and fighting the battles of giving females a voice.
Well, female friendship is like totally uncovered.
Oh, absolutely. Everybody just plays this as like the angsty women that clearly, I don't like the way you looked at me, even though you were about to sneeze. Ooh. So this show is going to be about how I claw your eyes out.
But the guys like it when the girls fight.
Yeah.
I want to say
theater.
I love the sense of camaraderie. I think that this sounds like an amazing production. Again, the world premiere of Girl Found is playing now through June 10th at the Edge Theater, Thursdays through Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Sundays at 3 p.m. The Edge Theater is at 5451 North Broadway, up by Bryn Mawr. And the website is idlemuse.org. Tickets start at $15. This is another one we have to go see, Scott.
Can I do a shameless plug just in general for Chicago Storefront Theater?
Yeah.
A lot of people think you have to have a lot of money to go see Chicago Storefront Theater, and that is absolutely not true.
Not at all.
Mm-hmm. $15, you know, it's like buy three less beers.
Exactly.
But it's the idea of there's so much amazing theater going on. You don't have to spend $80 a ticket to go see incredible theater. You do that every week. You talk about all of these great shows that are going on. And that's what we need, is local support for the art that's going on around us.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much for saying that.
I'm sorry.
I encourage everybody to go see Girl Found. And as she said, support your local theaters. And, you know, it's an intimate experience. You're with other people, sort of, you know, and the differences and the similarities are something that you'll be surprised by every single live performance. Thank you, ladies, so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
And again, go to idlemuse.org for more information. And we're going to take a break here and then the news on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio for just a few more weeks here on Michigan Avenue, and we'll be making a big move. The Tribune Tower, again, has been sold, and Scott Stantis, the political cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, joins me, and he also will be moving.
Yeah, it's breaking my heart, and that's not an exaggeration. This is really, really, really hard, and just the idea that, you know, in a couple of weeks, I'm going to be walking out of this building for the last time.
I know.
I mean, you know, it'll still be the Chicago Tribune. We'll still be producing a great newspaper. It'll just be a few blocks from here down at the Prudential One building. But it won't be the Tribune Tower. And I know. When I moved here, Janine didn't come. And the kid, and so I was just me for a couple of months. And the guy who managed this building at the time became a good friend, and he let my card open every door. So I didn't abuse it, didn't go through people's offices or anything crazy like that, but I could go up to the colonel's office. And, you know, the rumors were that there's a safe room there, right? And everyone told me, no, that's a bunch of crap, that it's not there, that, in fact, you know, that's just an urban legend. And I can tell you for a fact, because I've shown it to you, it exists.
Oh, that's right.
We've been up in the safe room. That the colonel was afraid the Bolsheviks or the Unionists
were going to come find him.
Yes, and the Union finally did come here, apparently, the Chicago Tribune. So I guess he was right.
Wow.
Found ways to get to the very top of the building. It's just it's a spectacular place in the history. And I've told you and your listeners this before. My dad, in a writing contest, it must have been in 1940, I guess, or 41, and it was a radio play contest, and he won and was going to Carl Schurz High School.
And he came
downtown to this building and performed it live on WGN radio.
How wild.
And my dad hawked the Chicago Tribune when he was a kid in the 30s here in Chicago. It's killing me. It's killing me.
Are you going to be at the, you know, we're doing our big party tomorrow, kind of our last big celebration here at WGN. We've got the Walk of Fame tomorrow starting at 10 a.m. and honoring some of the great legendary voices of Chicago. You know, this is a legendary radio station.
Yeah, what are they going to do at the Walk? Have they figured that one out
yet? Man, everyone wants to know about that. I don't know. I have no idea. I really do not know. I don't know. Do you put a Walk of Fame on a wall? Then it's just a Hall of Fame. I guess I don't know how heavy those plaques are.
Are they going to move it over to your new building, or?
Yeah, nobody has really said anything about that yet. Or do they take pictures of it and just have pictures of the plaques and just give back? I don't know what you do with that. I know. I mean, it is interesting. I don't think. I guess people just never thought that would happen. That they would sell the building.
No, I mean, well, no, and it's going to be condos or, you know, the Tribune Tower and Casino or whatever the hell it's going to be.
I'm enjoying hanging out at Howls and Hood because we're not going to have that experience at the new building. Do you
we
guys
need to do that because they have some the best selection, one among the best selections of beers,
no doubt,
on tap in the city.
I enjoy it.
I need to educate myself more before they go away.
I'm sorry, I just got distracted a moment ago. Esmeralda yeah. posted a story. I don't know if you when you posted this as, but about the infectious bacteria that's resistant to chlorine.
I just saw that.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a...
Oh, God, another thing to worry about? How do you...
Just don't go into pools. That's it.
Even if you have a pool in your yard or your neighborhood or you plan to take a dip in a hotel pool, a word of caution, a new report by the CDC warns that some infectious bacteria are resistant to chlorine, meaning like you get in the pool and you figure it's fine because the chlorine kills all the bacteria and you don't worry about it. I mean, I've been swimming since I was a baby. I mean, I've worked at pools. Obviously, I worked at Lake Michigan. I'm pretty sure there's a lot of infectious bacteria in that, and there's no way to scrub the lake. There's no, but so the Chicago Park District is working overtime. They're power washing and vacuuming the pools. The Park District of Oak Park is power washing, vacuuming the pools that they have right now in order to get ready for Memorial Day weekend.
Is this a new thing?
Yeah, it's. I just heard about this today too, and Esmeralda posted the link, and I was like, oh yeah, I forgot about that. So you know, and I guess talk to your if you have, you got to scrub your pools. But I don't know that I'll be going in any hotel pools for a while because that seems to not really get maintained.
Those super bugs freak me out.
Oh yeah, because that's what's going to take our species out, right? I mean, it's not going to be a bomb. It's going to be a microscopic thing that.
And then I saw some other lady got of flesh-eating bacteria from being in a hot tub, and I'm like, I'm out.
Oh,
I'm not getting into any public hot things.
Really? Now, as somebody who worked at a pools for at many pools actually, both in Chicago and in Champaign, Illinois, people don't like to read the signs like showering and making sure that babies have appropriate diapers on, like water, you know. Some people need to take care of those issues because you're all getting in the water together. Mm-hmm. But people really hate to shower. One time I was guarding at the IMPE in Champaign, the Intramural Physical Education Building. That's why it was called IMPE, which is...
IMPE.
IMPE. I know, it sounds sad. It's not there anymore. It's something else. But there was a guy... We had a lot of international students who had varying degrees of aquatic wear. But the craziest thing I saw was a guy swimming in his tidy whities.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I know. I was just like, dude.
Did you kick him out?
Yes! I kicked him. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to yell so loudly.
You were back on the tall chair.
We had the weird. Oh no, my lifeguard voice was vicious. There was one guy who actually wrote a letter. He was. He was swimming laps. So IMPE had an indoor Olympic sized pool with like a high dive, a low dive, and the diving well was in the middle, and it was quite deep. I want to say it was at least it was 18 feet because you had to have the high dive, and on either side there were, you know, lanes, so people would swim their laps. And this guy just left his kids alone. They were about 7 and 9 years old, maybe a little bit younger. They couldn't swim, and they were jumping off the diving board and then struggling to get back to the ledge. And I went over to his lane and I said, you need to have your kids play in the shallow water where they can stand up. And he was very contentious with me and got very irate and complained to our aquatic
director. His kids were drowning.
I know. I was like, I go, sir, when your children are struggling and I have to get in the water for them, that puts everybody at danger. I mean, I'm going to jump in the water for them, but this is not how you, I don't know, your kid's babysitter when they don't know how to swim. So you can play with them in the shallow area anyway. So months later, first he wrote a letter of complaint to the aquatics director who backed me, and then months later we were at the outdoor pool, and he wrote a letter to the director again saying that he felt very uncomfortable swimming there because I had a very hostile stare. he felt I was staring at him hostily, which might have been possible, but I'm a lifeguard. I always had that very serious, like, you know, do not mess with me sort of a thing. Everybody that came out of the shower, I used to send people back to the shower. I'm like, soapy shower fully, because they would come in with like hair products and suntan, all the oils on their body and their sweat. By the end of the summer, we would have this film of gunk, you know, that was floating on the water because people would not rinse off. Yeah, I was a bit of a strict lifeguard. I know. I hear, you know what my motto always was?
What?
It's not my job to make sure you have fun. It's my job to make sure you go home alive. What does it tell you?
That's a t-shirt.
More after this at 720 WGN. Just as we head into summer, the Memorial Day weekend just a couple weeks away, the CDC has announced that there's an infectious bacteria that is resistant to chlorine. People, you know, they pump all those chemicals in there, figuring they're killing all the gunky stuff. And now the CDC says that might not be enough.
How does it present itself? Do we know?
Hold on a second. It's funny. I stopped scrolling because I'm like, I don't want to know. Well, they were also talking about at some of the pools, they hope that people are educated enough to know that if they're having bathroom problems, please don't come to the pool. Do we?
And that's also what happens.
Yes. So that's another, like we often go to the water park, you know, in the air is a lot of the water parks.
Yeah.
They will shut the whole thing down when they know that someone's had an accident.
Yeah.
And then your day's over. Let me take a look and see if I can find the information about what that.
I'm just curious because I have we still have a home down in Birmingham, Alabama, and you know, it has a swimming pool. So I'm like, do I need to warn my children?
Your son lives down there. Does he maintain the pool?
Yes, he and his wife, so...
Let's see, I'll pull up the article from the 708.
yes.
Thank you for sharing this very personal thing, because I don't know that I've ever had... I don't think I've ever had this situation. When I came into my womanliness, my, you know... anyway, you know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
She got her... the monthly painters were in. She was riding the cotton pony. No, I don't know what you mean. She got it at her friend's house, swimming in the swimming pool. She was so embarrassed. Bacteria in the swimming pool, and she was diving off the diving boards, ran and skidded her foot. I guess to run away from it.
Wait,
yeah, I'm having trouble reading this text.
She skidded her foot like she was about to fall, or did she skid in something?
Yeah, yeah, that's what I took away from it.
Yeah. Bacteria.
That's a lot.
Oh no! Too late. Then she wrote, "Don't read my text." Oh no!
Well, we don't know who you are.
I'm so sorry. I'm like, what? It was a wrong order.
No one has no idea.
I have no idea who you are. Erase. We'll take that out of the podcast. I'm so sorry.
Happened.
It never happened.
There was a good 7-minute buffer in that. Yeah, don't read my text.
Yeah, I know. Did you see that text come in?
Hmm.
Right. One came in at 12:49. Yes, and the next one, "Don't read my text," came in at 12:56. People are like,
so what do you think happened between the first and the second?
I started
text?
Reading the text.
Oh,
I'm so no, so very
sorry.
Well, the good news is I don't understand what you wrote, so that helps. I think, except for
I think we do. I'm letting my imagination go wild.
Well, I don't know why that's necessary, but there you go. But let's for the 7-0, we'll switch topics for everybody. We'll mental scrub. Speaking of scrubbing, I know that you had not heard of this, and I know many people are tired of the what did you hear, Yanny Laurel debate. You had not heard about this until today.
Yeah, well, I saw mention of it on Facebook. I'm going, what the hell are people talking about?
There are people who really genuinely feel that this is a trick. There is a guy on my feed who says that he was involved. So this whole thing allegedly originated when a student in Georgia was working on a project, and she was going to feature, she was working on like classic words, classical literature, and she had the word Laurel, and she wanted to use the vocabulary.com site with the pronunciation, with the origin of the word, you know, just part of her research. And she was in class and she played it for her class, and she realized that there were people who did not hear Laurel, they heard Yanny. And then one of the classmates posted it on Facebook to see what other people thought, and then it ended up on someone's YouTube, and that's how it blew up. Somebody who had there's a YouTuber.
Can we play it? Can you? Because I know it's on your...
It's on my phone? Yeah, we will pull it up that way. But
Can people text in? I'm dying to know if people hear.
Well, we did this last night, and
did. I'm sorry.
No, don't be sorry. It's okay. But people are. I think there are still conversations now. People are getting like really skeptical. There are some people are getting very angry about it.
What do you got? I mean, why this country goes from zero to angry over everything?
I know.
I'm sorry.
No. I agree
I just
with
did
you.
It. It's like stop being so mad.
And, you know, Ro Khan had on a neurospecialist yesterday from Dolby, of all things. So somebody who would know about the science and the way we hear sounds. So it was a great conversation. Everyone can check out Ro Khan's podcast for yesterday and hear that excellent conversation, I thought. By the way, I can't use the exact language that Marley Matlin used, but she said, "Don't ask me, I can't hear crap." So,
That's funny.
Of course, the musician Yanni also chimed in and said that he hears Yanni. And my friend Dan wants to know if I think that people whose name is Laurel are annoyed by this. So there you go.
Annoyed by the conversation, just the idea. It's interesting. What the New York Times did is they broke it down, the file they had, and it looks like one of the words is a higher register and one is at a lower. And so I'm going to guess that men hear the lower and women hear the higher, and that's because generally, and this is my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, that men tend, when they start losing their hearing, we lose it at the higher ranges.
Okay.
And women, when they start losing their hearing, lose it at the lower.
I have not found that it's been gender specific. I mean, like Griffin can hear, would hear Laurel. So the word is actually Laurel.
Right.
And yes, it's the people who only pick up the lower decibels are here. And I don't know how or why, because it makes no sense. It's all completely, the only word that's the same is the A.
Yeah, I don't, well, and how did it happen?
Let's hear it again. Let's hear Michael's, and I'll see if I can play it from my phone, because I always feel like my phone, it sounds different on my phone. And then you're also hearing it through different origins. Go ahead.
Laurel.
Wait a minute. Now, yesterday when you play, are you playing from the same source as you did yesterday? I don't understand what's happening.
What are you hearing?
This is the same sort. It's on CNN.com, the one that I played last night, when everyone did. Half of the people said that they heard Yanny, and then half said they heard Laurel, and now I can hear nothing but Laurel, and it's driving me crazy, Patty.
I only hear Yanny this time. Remember
Wait,
last
what?
Night?
What?
I hear Yanny.
No, it's Laurel, clear as a bell.
Yeah, I heard Yanny. Oh. And Esmeralda never hears anything.
I
but
only hear Laurel.
What? Oh, yeah, you only hear Laurel. Yeah. No matter what, no matter what version of it is, no matter what the source is, Esmeralda always hears Laurel. She never hears.
I heard one where the guy was physically
Tweaking it,
and then you could hear it, but he was tweaking it.
Right.
So he was messing with it.
Michael, can you run that again? I'm sorry.
Laurel.
You hear Yanny?
I hear Yanny.
Yeah. I can't believe that. Ellen DeGeneres did something like this. She played it on her show, and I heard nothing but Yanny, and everyone was saying that they heard nothing but Laurel, and then I was like, am I going crazy? It is really making me feel like I'm losing my mind.
No, that's yes.
Well, I wonder, is this, so if I just say Laurel,
right.
Laurel. Do you hear Yanny?
No.
Like,
isn't
is
weird?
It just the record, when it's recorded, or what is it?
I hear Katowski.
That's so funny.
It must be just the recording, because people actually are saying that they're starting to.
What? Why are both happening at the same time?
Oh,
my phone just. It killed my phone.
People are saying they're hearing different robotic voices now when they hear it. It's like you're hearing like a totally different thing. When
I hear that all the time, but it's usually to do harm to the neighborhood cats.
Oh, we're late for the news. Now people are starting to text, and here's why you might hear two different things and why you might not. Yeah, I'm hearing, it depends for me, it goes back and forth.
That's so funny.
Yeah, but I was definitely hearing Yanny from his source. Let's take a break, and then, do we have to take a break for the news? I'm super late, everybody. See what I did? That stupid bacteria in the pools, I blame them. So I tried to veer away from the bacteria in pools by talking about Yanny and Laurel and the discrepancy, that moment where you're sitting in the room like we just did. Mike, Esmeralda, and Scott all heard Laurel. I was the only one that heard Yanny. People are texting in and saying, when it comes through my WGN, this is when it comes through my WGN radio, on WGN radio, through my truck radio, I always hear Laurel. When I play it on my phone, I hear Yanny every time. From the 847.
That's so strange.
It is very strange. I've heard three different words depending on what.
Wait, three?
Three. I most often hear Yeri, which makes sense because a combination, a little bit of Laurel and I can see that. No,
sure.
Ending. Okay. But not Yanny, Laurel in my car and Yanny in my car from G. So go figure from the 847. Depends on what device you hear it from. Yanny on the TV. Are we sure from the 708? Are we sure Russia isn't messing with our psyche? I don't know. Well, at least it seems like an innocuous diversion as long as people don't go too crazy about it. That's
What's
all.
Laurel mean?
Oh, it's a like isn't the, it, it's the, a type of leaf, isn't
no,
it?
Isn't
the leaf,
the crown? Is it the crown that the Romans?
A crown of laurels, isn't it? Okay, don't get me started. And also, platypuses are from the Galapagos Islands. I can get everything wrong all in one night. Just give me a few moments.
You wear the laurels, you know, the olive leaves around your head when you were...
Yes, like Julius Caesar used to wear.
And they actually presented, you actually got that when you won the gold medal in the first Olympics in 1896.
I can see a conspiracy theory forming somehow.
Oh, yeah, no, people are definitely posting about that, too.
I think it's Johnny, because no one's talked about him in ages.
No, that's a good point.
Viral marketing?
Really good, yeah,
God,
brilliant.
That would be brilliant. Although I would buy every one of his records if this was true.
I agree.
I would. It was like, okay, this is brilliant.
From the 312, I heard Laurel on your show, but Rokon played and tweaked the Yanny Laurel recording 2 days ago, and I heard Yanny at normal, fast, slow, all the speeds. On Channel 5 News, I heard Yanny. On other radio shows and station, I heard Laurel sometimes and Yanny. It's so bizarre. But the thing is, it's not just like what you hear. It's the fact that other people listening to it have the discrepancy like we just did now.
Yeah.
So that's very, very, which if Michael said he's playing the exact same one he played yesterday. And this is the, I heard Laurel last night and Yanny
So it could
tonight.
Be a trick played on us by Michael.
Mm-hmm. Playing the Laurel thing from the same source, you can change the words by raising the bass and dropping the treble and then back again. So that makes sense.
I did not raise any treble or bass.
I hear Yanny on every device. That's from the 312. It has to do with how much bass or treble coming out of the device. So there. And so I tried getting away from the bacteria, but Rod's like, nope, I want to talk about pool bacteria. Hey, Rod, how are you doing tonight?
Pretty good, I guess. Room for improvement as usual.
Same.
I heard that about the bacteria just tonight. No, I didn't hear about it, you know, until I heard you talking about it. But I did work for Wells, you know, Wells Service, you know, because out in the country, everybody's got wells, you know. And when we would change a pump or something, by law, my boss, you know, he'd have to go to these DNR meetings.
Right.
And we had to put these tablets in the well after we're done working on it. Cause, you know, you pull it up in your hands or whatever, but it's on the grass, dog poop, you know, you name it. And it's on the bottle, you know, these tablets, Now, it's sodium hypochlorite. That, of course, when you go to buy, like, bleach, you know, in the store.
Sure.
You get bleach, which for years has been standard 6%. Nowadays, you can get this concentrated 8.25%. These tablets are, like, 70%, 71%. And, like, if you've got 100 feet of water in a well... and say it's 180 feet deep, so you got, you know, 1,200 feet of water.
Okay.
And a 6-inch well,
it's very specific. I'm trying to track. Okay, we're trying to track. Go ahead there.
Generally, it was about six or seven tablets, you know, what they recommended to put it in. And, of course, you had to let it sit for about an hour. Then you would run it, you know, run it out. And, of course, if we let it run out on somebody's lawn, or pretty soon you could see the night crawlers coming straight out of the ground.
Ooh, okay. Don't want that.
Yeah, no, it's the best thing to do is just run it out, like, on blacktop someplace so that it evaporates, you know, but because it doesn't break the blacktop down, it doesn't, that petroleum product, you know, rock.
So okay.
It doesn't hurt that. But that, I don't know if they've, if since you brought it up, I'm just wondering if you looked into it, if they use like 70% hypochlorite, sodium hypochlorite, or if that, you know, if any kind of bacteria can survive that, I don't know what kind it is. Now, maybe the stuff I used to clean the truck with, the aluminum on the trailer, you'd spray it on, and then you have to power wash it off, and it would turn the aluminum just white, you know, stuff just 50.
Sure. Well, I mean, I'm guessing that there's a concern in the sense, you know, there the levels of chlorine and the chemicals that are in it, you know, you have to take in consideration how it affects the skin, right?
Yeah, you don't want it to melt off or something.
Or breathing. I mean, like, there have been times when I would swim and it would just feel so strong when you inhaled that smell.
Well, it would have to be put into the source of the water, you know, and it would have to sit because we would have to, like, some wells that they would condemn if it was a public place, they would have to, we would have to put them tablets in, and then you'd have to leave it sit for 48 hours and, you know, and then run it, and then we'd have to heat the faucet, you know, with a torch, you know, right off the tank where the well comes to your pressure tank, and then, you know, heat it with a torch or something to kill any bacteria, other bacteria, and then take the sample from there after 48 hours after you ran it, you know.
Right.
You could run it until you didn't smell it or taste, you know, because generally speaking, you always tasted a little bit of chlorine.
Yeah.
Until,
no doubt.
If you let it leak, no, you're not going to. But I don't know if it could survive that stuff. I mean, that's bad news. I mean, it just burns, you know. But
sure.
If you use the aluminum trailers with, that one's a 50% hydrochloric acid and 50% sulfuric acid. And my boss would have me dilute it 50% with water and then spray that onto the aluminum and you'd make one pass all the way from one end to the other and then you'd power wash it off and the aluminum would just turn white, you know. If you leave it on too long, it would actually hit the aluminum.
Well, here's what I think, Rod. I think we need you out there cleaning every single pool in America.
Well, I don't know. If they're getting it from city water, you know, I'm sure there's chemists and engineers that are working on it. I mean, you know, that's in Chicago water?
No, this is the CDC is saying this is all over the country. They're ringing the alarm bell that hard to kill germs might be lurking in your hotel pool, water parks, neighborhood pools, backyard pools.
Well, yeah, I don't know. You know, I mean, you know, the water wells out here, I mean, you know, like I said, the hypochlorite tablets generally took care of any bacteria.
Well, let's hope that some people out there have the knowledge that you have and the chemists working on it can keep people well this summer. Thank you so much for calling, Rod.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Have a great night. Now back to the Yanny Laurel raging debate on 720 WGN. Glenn, what do you want to tell us? Glenn? Did I not? Oh, sorry. Sorry, Glenn. There you are.
Hi, I'm here.
Hey there.
I just wonder if anyone ever bothered looking up the reverse so if the name Yanny is in the word base, how would that word come out? Would it just come out Yanny, or would it come out people hearing Laurel?
If they did what with it, like the base?
Well, you know, pick, like if Yanny is in the word base, because Yanny is a name.
Right.
Oh,
you're saying if you have the audio recording of Yanny from, but see, vocabulary.com wouldn't have, because I don't know that Yanny is a...
We could test it out.
We'll try it out.
I know this has been such a... I was listening to Bob and Tom this morning. Well, you know him. He just goes on and on and on.
Oh, yeah. Tom can get very... What was Tom's take on this?
Everyone's stupid, basically.
Yes. Know. Yes, that sounds like my friend Tom. You know. Yes.
But they even... You know, it's such a debate that they even went so far as that they went and talked to the man who actually recorded the word Laurel, and he said... yes, he did say Laurel.
Right.
But, well, of course he did. That's all I heard.
Right.
You know, but...
Well, here, hold on the phone. I'm gonna put you on hold, and I want to thank you so much for calling, but Michael's going to play... are you at... What site are you at?
I'm at dictionary.com.
Okay, so... And you've typed in the word Yanny?
This is the word Yanny.
Is it a word that's defined on dictionary.com?
I'm looking up Y-O-N-I, which is Yanny. It's pronounced the exact same way.
Right. Who's to say that Yanny is spelled Y-A-N-N-Y? Why have we... Who locked into that determination? All right.
Not me.
Here's the... Let's see what we hear.
Yoni.
Oh.
Oops. Maybe it's Yoni.
Oh.
I hear Laurel still, though, for some reason.
More after this. We'll take Bill's call after we... wait. That's Okay, hold on. We got to go to break, and then we'll come back and take Bill's call. Thank you so much for calling, Glenn. Have a great night. More after this on 720 WGN. The debate that has gripped the nation... And it really annoyed. It's annoying to some people. I think it's kind of it's an interesting diversion. I think it's fascinating when you're standing in a room with other people. For me, it was my family. Steve and I both heard Yanny. Griffin heard Laurel, which is the actual word. For those of you who don't know, this is this for me. It started yesterday. I got home from work. That yesterday being Wednesday morning, and I saw a Facebook post. I didn't even post the link to the sound because I just was like, Okay, let me before we take Bill's call. I was listening to it, and then everybody woke up in the house because I just happened to be still awake at six in the morning, and not because of Yanni or Laurel. I was just curious. Anyway, I just was up and
kept you up.
So I was playing.
I just couldn't sleep.
No, it's not why. So I was playing for Steve as he was getting up, and he was like, "Why are you bothering? I haven't had coffee right now." But I was playing for him. He heard Yanni, so I went in the living room, and I didn't tell Griffin what it was. I just put it next to his head, and I played, and I pressed play, and I said, "What do you hear?" And he said, "Laurel." I'm like, "No, you don't." I'm sorry. Before he did that, though, for about 20 minutes, he woke up. I'm not kidding you, Scott. You know my son.
Yes.
My son got out of bed, walked into the kitchen, and was ranting about how we do not take good enough care of our veterans. I don't know what he was dreaming about, but he jumped out of bed and he was like, "You know, here are men and women who are putting their lives on the lines for us, you know, defending our country. We say we respect them. We say that we want to honor them. And yet here we are not able to hold up our end of the bargain." He's like ranting in my kitchen. I'm like, "What do you hear?" Like, what do you hear?
Yeah, more importantly.
Yes. There are problems in the world. But no, seriously, what do you hear coming out of my mouth? He's like, "What does that have to do with anything?" I'm like, "I don't know, but you're freaking me out, man. I need to go
to bed.
Funny. He's amazing. So I don't know what he was dreaming about. I don't like the VA hospital. Like maybe he was in charge. Like he was having a dream where he was in charge of
No, Governor Rauner spent another night in Quincy at the veterans home.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Let's take
Bill's
call.
Is he getting points? I mean,
no. Okay. He's got his premier card. Is he trying to rack up some miles that we're saying? Hey, Bill. Okay, so let's go back to the Yanni. You hear something different from everybody else. Not too far different off the mark, but what do you hear, Bill?
Laurel.
Oh, you hear Laurel. I thought you heard Laura. You hear Laurel every time, no matter what the device
yes.
is? Every,
yes.
Okay, so where else have you heard it?
I heard it at work and stuff, and people like at grocery stores, and it's weird.
And you've been around other people who hear Yanni, right?
Yes.
And when you first realized that, did you think everyone around you was just tricking you?
Yes.
Yes, that's what people. That's how people are feeling. It's making some people mad. I don't know why.
I know. There's so much other things to get mad at.
Well, here, speaking of which, from the 608, Laurel Yanni, all I hear is impeach, 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 which that's a totally different thing. Maybe that's all they hear all the time. Well, Bill, I hope that what do you think about this conversation? Do you think it's gotten old?
Yes.
All right.
Okay.
I will take a break and we shall suspend this conversation. We are done, and thus endeth permanently the Yanni Laurel conversation, unless we find something else about it. All right. Thank you, Bill. Have a great night.
All right, you too.
Thank you. More after this on 720 WGN. I have to admit something. I really, really hate lying to the audience. And I don't know if this is not really necessarily lying. It's more of a going back on my word. I think that I said that I was gonna, I said, Scott, the last thing I said before I went to the break, as I'm gonna apologize to you directly, Esmeralda. I promised that I was not going to go back to the Yanni Laurel conversation.
Oh boy!
But people are kicking the door back open, and I
didn't think they really had to kick it.
Yeah,
they kind of slowly pushed it open.
You gotta get some oil. You gotta get some oil for that hinge on that door. I don't like to do this, but I think that there's a couple of interesting texts that just came through. Sometimes, you know, people hang back, and I don't want to leave them out of the conversation. And they shared some thoughts. And Michael mentioned, and I completely forgot as soon as he said it, that he had another audio sort of sorcery for us. And the reason I use the word sorcery is because from the 708, my friend will not listen to Yanni Laurel because she thinks it's someone's way of hypnotizing us all. We're all distracted. Something bad. Does that mean something?
For what, though?
It's
mind control. I don't know.
What nefarious.
Which gives me a little. It does. It creeps me out a little bit because if you see how quickly this spread and how consumed we became. I mean, like I was charmed by the Bears taking time out of practice to like pass the phone around, and they were all hearing different things, and they're like, "You do not hear that." They're all like, "It was charming." And celebrities jumped in on it. Ellen's, you know, jumped in on it. It's just, it's been kind of a nice diversion. But maybe the 708's friend is right. We're being manipulated to not pay attention to something bigger going on. I don't know. But Michael, are you trying to hypnotize us with some other audio?
I am, in fact.
Sleight of hand?
It's all, I'm the actually the wizard behind all of this, and no, I'm not. But right. I'm so happy when things like this in pop culture translate to radio so well. So
this is the only thing that has ever, I mean, you know, the dress thing didn't work for us. Nope.
Couldn't make sense to it.
I never.
Yeah, that would be terrible.
Is it bad that I didn't even see stripes? Is that bad? I'm kidding.
That's the cool thing about this. It really just dives into your brain and shows what the power of suggestion and what we think we hear most of the time does to us. It's like a magic trick for your ears.
Are you going to freak me out?
Yeah, I am a little bit. This is what I saw today on the TV. And take a listen to this first clip for me. All right, do you hear that?
I heard like...
I'm already scared.
It sounds right. It sounds like someone walking in the rain.
Pretty weird, right? Okay, now I'm going to play one more clip for you, okay?
Okay.
The juice of lemons makes fine punch.
Okay.
All right, now let's take a quick listen to that first clip that I played.
Oh, that's
weird.
Pretty weird, right?
I don't like this.
I have goosebumps. This is bizarre.
Why are you trying to hypnotize us, Michael?
What do you want of us, Michael?
I just want to let you guys know that the juice of lemon makes fine punch.
Do you want us to make punch for you? is that a pseudonym?
Can we put some gin in the fine punch?
You have an evil power and that's all you want?
Isn't that bizarre, though? Like, what we can hear once, like, we're like, oh, this is brought to the light of day, and then everything becomes totally clear.
Right, it just sounds like static or...
Can you play the first one again just to see if there's staying power, the suggestion?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, now you can hear it.
Totally
not clear as day. You have to be.
This is thoroughly scaring me.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
it's really freaky.
This is freaking out.
Because before it's just total garbled noise, and then all of a sudden you can hear an a person speaking to you.
That is awesome.
And this is the perfect time to be doing it. I mean, like after midnight, nothing good happens after midnight.
Dun dun dun
dun dun dun. None of the other shows are going to pick this one up. Why am I listening to WGN? Garble garble garble. Something about a lemon and punch.
But I'm thirsty. Eat vitamin C.
So is that something that that was on TV? They were talking about the way audio can what our brain perceives if it's kind of led in a certain direction.
Well, we all perceive the world a little bit differently based on our experiences, and this is I think this was a scientific experiment done by a Northwestern professor actually. I'm looking back into this, and yeah, it was on TV today, and they were showing how much sound affects our lives and our ears. It's really crazy what's going on. So maybe you are being hypnotized. I have no idea.
All right.
Hope not.
Very strange. Well, from the 630, please, enough already. See? Again, I went back on my word, and you're not wrong. I feel badly, but that was an interesting sort of, you know, I don't know if you're mad about what Michael played. We're doing something different now, but that doesn't seem to be different enough for the 630. So go ahead. I'll give you something different.
Esmeralda, you want to close the door on it?
Yeah, please. There you go. It's closed. It was creepy. And now it's closed. Thank you so much for that, Michael.
Is it closed where, like, the lock doesn't lock, so then it can open at any time?
It's back open. One more time with Yenny.
Okay. No! That was not me. That was not me. That was not me. That was not me. There you go.
Oh, good for you!
Okay. So I do want to go back there because we have something good coming up, and I don't think this is I should not revel in somebody else's demise, even though it was of their own making. Scott, you made me feel like maybe I was too gleeful about this story that many people know about already from New York. An attorney was taking a lunch break, and while he was grabbing some food, he was very angry that two women were speaking Spanish to each other and proceeded to just rant and rave and threaten to call ICE and have them deported, and he pays for them to be there. And then, oh, by the way, did you see the part of it he said maybe you want to skip lunch?
No, what?
Yeah, that was part of the rant, was that he basically was telling her that she shouldn't eat because she
looked, oh right, she's overweight.
Yes, maybe. So so I don't know. Esmeralda, I don't know if you have watched how this has been unfolding.
Oh yeah, I have.
Oh yeah. So
have you followed the Twitters tonight? What the other stuff, they because he's being stalked now by reporters and the New York Post, and he runs away.
People are gathering money to get mariachis to play.
They've changed the photo on his Yelp page, so it says business, it says Mexican restaurant, all kinds of stuff. Obviously, his Yelp page. They had to cease the ability for people to post anything on his Yelp page. The building where he has his office has thrown him out. They are ending their his ability to lease from them. Apparently, they have guidelines.
I have a problem with that. I do.
Well, it depends on how you, the contract. Maybe there's something.
This seems like a First Amendment issue, though, and I don't know.
Well, maybe because he was threatening them and yell and harass. Maybe this definitely falls under harassment, as opposed to some of the stories that happened last week. I'm curious because there were people who, when they heard the stories about the black student at Yale and the black family in Oakland, when police were summoned for nothing that was urgent, that never is there a reason to call the police on a sleeping person that you don't want in your building, or for calling the police about the charcoal. Okay, let's go over this again. Do we remember? Why do you call the police? If you see a fire, maybe if the woman was on fire, if she had jumped into the coal in Oakland, then she could call the police.
Or if the sleeping woman were on fire.
Yes. Just, anyway, if you see a car accident. So unless she had driven her car up into the park, or these are imminent danger situations. It's like when you honk because you don't like the car in front of you for not. It's not like that. It's awful. You do not call first responders. Okay, I'm gonna stop. For innocuous, stupid reasons. Okay, now I'll stop. So I'm curious for the people who are like, well, there's probably more to the story, or they were breaking the rules, or that, you know, using charcoal is a crime, which it's not. It's a rule. It's not a rule. It's not a breaking the law. Neither is sleeping while black. It's not breaking the law. But so the people who side with those who called the police, who feel like, oh, well, mm-hmm. you know, they shouldn't have been using charcoal, or what's the big deal? The black woman looks suspicious. So from those people, that group of people, I would like to know if this also falls under, this seems completely normal and legit, because I kind of feel like even racists were like, well, that's crazy. Right? I kind of feel like whack job racists, you know, robe Klansmen are like, well, that's a little over the top.
Yeah, whoa. What's with that guy? at the cross burning.
Dude, go for a massage. This? Yeah. I mean, I just think that they gotta be like, you're not one of us. You don't. Plus, he's Jewish, so they wouldn't want him anyway.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, you want to look at your own history, pal? You know, I mean, like, this is, you know, look at your own history of your people.
And this isn't the first time he's been video recorded.
Yeah. He yells at other Jewish people and says that they're not Jewish because he is. He's like, I'm Jewish. You're not Jewish. And, like, proceeds to yell all kinds of profanities at them. Anyway, so this is it's a bizarre. He brought it on himself. Everything that's happening, and some of it is mirthful. I don't know what the contract is that he had with his landlord where his office was, but they are expelling him from the building. Maybe all the attention is they feel like it's a safety risk. I don't know the wording of it, but
that'd be interesting. I mean, that seems extreme to me. I mean, this is, I'm not defending them.
No, I know you're not. I don't mean you saw me smile. By the way, everyone, Scott is responding to the fact that I just had a smile, just kind of like, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, I know. No, there's a level of, it's a German word.
Schadenfreude.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. but careful. I don't want to get in any trouble with anybody. I've never understood, I guess. I mean, look, we talked about this on the Mincing Rascals, which is available on our WGN Facebook page. I've never understood people who just become unhinged when they see a sign that has more than one language, or they hear people talk. And you guys were talking about how it makes you, John in particular was saying it makes him feel insecure when other people are speaking while he's in their presence.
Feel anything.
I was like,
care.
Oh, they're having a conversation. But
I've talked to friends who speak Spanish, and they say, you know what they're talking about? They're not talking about you.
Right. And here's the thing, even if they are talking about you, what difference does it make? What do you care? How is that fundamentally going to change your life? What is the impact of someone? They're not yelling at you. They're not threatening to call the police on you.
They're
having a conversation. Yeah.
If they're pointing and mocking, then it's something different.
As I don't know if I've told this story before, but I was getting, I told on this Mincing Rascals today, I was getting a pedicure. And the women in the salon all spoke another language that I didn't understand. And the woman working on my foot picked my foot up out of the water, showed it to the woman behind her, and they both started laughing, and she proceeded to go back to work. And I was like, oh, that was weird. I mean, I still remember it.
Do you know what were they laughing at?
I have no idea. Maybe there's like a tattoo on the bottom of my foot that I didn't know about. That I haven't. I mean, I generally wash the bottom of my feet. I'm pretty aware of what's going on down there. So I don't know what I so I it just it, and I and I didn't ask because it does it kind of amuses me, but I don't it's just kind of it's more funny than anything else. I'm like, well, what was that? But I'm not mad about it. It's just quirky and weird.
Well, like
it's no big deal. Who cares if they? I don't know.
I don't. Well, and I don't care. I grew up in a household. Where second language was spoken, another language was spoken. My grandparents all had first languages, and so this is not something that disturbs or affects me or in any way, shape, or form. So to go like this guy and go nuts, I mean, anyway, have you ever walked down the streets of Chicago? It's one of the most amazing experiences because you will hear 5 to 10 different languages. Some of them, I think they're just making words up.
But. This is the other thing that's crazy to me is that there are people on social media who are like, the guy's right. I saw this on other people's, like Windy City Live shared this, and there were several people with names that were from Eastern Europe, right? So a lot of consonants, a lot of Z's and Y's and W's, and they're like, he's right, they should only speak English, right? Really? Everyone should only speak English?
Actually,
everyone?
What happened to we're in a free country?
Well, that's know. Number one.
Also,
number
those people are being real snowflakes.
You think?
Yeah.
Good Lord.
He melted down right in front of them, snowflake.
By the way, Michael, I know we're running out of time, but if you could find what Middle English sounded like, there's examples of like Chaucer, which is considered some of the great literature of Western culture. And what that actually sounds like, and then tell me, speak English.
That we're speaking English. Well, you know.
Because it's incomprehensible.
And the other thing is, are people just infuriated by the fact that people are speaking another language because they can't? I mean, like, this is the one of the countries in the world that's so, we have so much progress. We have so much to be proud of. But it's embarrassing that we only speak, for the most part, we only speak one language.
Yeah.
Most Americans speak only one language.
Oh, no. We
and that's embarrassing.
Travel to Europe regularly, and yeah, you go to France or to Italy or anywhere, and they speak at least two languages.
And that's not the case with this guy. This guy, Aaron Schlossberg, is actually, he's fluent in Spanish. It's one of the things that he promotes his law firm with, that he will help people who speak other languages. So why would they speak other languages if they're not supposed to, especially in front of you?
Yeah, I think he's a troubled person.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going
to... Oh, a racist?
Yeah, I would say racists are troubled.
No, I would say racism is definitely a mental illness, wouldn't you?
I'm not throwing it in that category.
I think it seems like a choice. Racism is a choice. You choose.
You do choose, but I think that I think it speaks to your intelligence. I think
it speaks to your intelligence. Yes, I agree with that.
So
dude's a lawyer. He had to go to law school. He had to go to college.
Have you talked to lawyers?
Oh, boy. I'm going to tell Paul you said that.
He had to take tests. I think he has some level of intelligence.
Well, although, to Scott's point, is there are people who do really well on tests and are just incompetent when it comes to being human beings.
Yeah.
There's also some people that I know that are real dumb that are not racist.
More after this on 720 WGN.